This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
From the ArmeniaProud.com studios,
Genatsit Hayed.
This is A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. A comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on lineupmedia.fm.
Genatsit, Parluis, Inchpesek, my friends. This is Jano Kabinjian, and we have our show here, Armenia Proud. And this show, I guess, it's not going to be a long show. I have one guest here, and this guest, I think, is an interesting guest here because we get little updates on, well, every time I read the news on Facebook or I read the news on Horizon or something regarding the Armenian world out there in Artsakh and all that, you know, I always just get it on that perspective. I'd like to kind of get a, I don't want to say a war correspondent because that would mean they're out there, but maybe someone that's been there before and has military background or the family and all that. And I found someone, Brian. I found Tigran Zakarian, and I read some of Tigran's posts on Facebook, and I really enjoyed it. And I felt, you know what? It's good timing to have someone like this educate our people about it. You know, there was so many times when I used to watch the Armenian channel, and I didn't understand the Armenian they were talking when they were interviewing these Armenian soldiers. So I'd be there like I was picking up one word, two words here, and it never was pretty good the way I kind of thought everything was being said. But now we've got Tigran on board, and Tigran's going to give us his updates on what's going on in Artsakh, in Armenia's politics and stuff like that. I think it's a refreshing type of segment to have. I mean, we've got the cooking segment. We've got the we've had horoscopes. We've had stuff like that. We've got our wine segment. Why not have something on the lines of where we have someone that can tell us what's happening in Artsakh and maybe even graphically sometimes tell us what's happening in the trenches and stuff like that. I think that's great because we've never had that. And a lot of times, again, when I watched in the mid-90s or early 90s those Armenian soldiers being interviewed, I never knew what the hell they were saying, and I wish I did. But my Armenian's bad, and especially the Artsakh language, I couldn't understand at all. But the Armenian language, I pick up two, three words there. You know, here, you know where I'm going with this. But at least we got someone now, Tigran Zakarian. Tigran, how are you?
Barev, good. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm so happy to have you on and give us some perspective on current events and plus a little bit about the history of how it all unfolded and all that, and I'm very happy that you said you'd be happy to do it.
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank you for having me on your podcast. I know that a lot of people who live outside of Armenia, some of them don't speak Armenian, and it's really hard for them to, like, listen to news and stuff and, like, get, like, be informed. So most of the time they just follow media, and, like, you know, media doesn't always tell the truth, and you don't always, you know, get the whole picture by reading what the media says. So I really like your idea. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Because, Tigran, it was so general what we picked up from BBC or what we picked up from any branch from Western news. I mean, we couldn't pick up what you folks and the Armenian news was reporting, and whatever we heard bits and pieces of what we could make out, and I'm so glad to have you on board.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So, Tigran, tell me right now. Let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about what it took to preserve our homeland. What? How much? I mean, it was incredible how much pride and how much nationalistic feeling we had, even as the diaspora embraced Armenia and Armenians throughout the world just became together because of Artsakh. It was unbelievable how we all got together again.
Yeah, that's true. So basically, you know, what happened during Soviet Union, pretty much we didn't have war, and being in Soviet Union, that's what prevented us to fight the Turks or the other is the same Turks. I call them just Caucasian Turks. So, and the war has been going on for many, many years. Just being in Soviet Union, that's what stopped both of us to fight. And once we got out of Soviet Union, they wanted the Artsakh, or they call it Nagorno-Karabakh. I don't want to call it Nagorno-Karabakh.
Right.
And, yeah. So, being a person who was born in Artsakh, lived there and raised there, and from many generations, I'm from Artsakh. And people, they just, you know, I don't know if you know, but Artsakh is the only state of Armenia, of Eastern Armenia, that never let the Persians to come and take it over, never let the Turks to come and take it over because of the geographical location.
Mm-hmm.
And until the Russians came in the late 1800s, you know, and Artsakh was a part of Russia. That's, you know, Artsakh was never been taken by the Turks or the Persians or whatsoever. So, and that's our land. And, you know, we have been losing lands, and, you know, we have been losing our cities and stuff since it's been almost 2,000 years. So if we kept losing those cities, we wouldn't have Armenia, because if there is no Artsakh, there would be no Armenia.
Right.
If there is no Armenia, there is no Armenian nation.
Right. Now, for people out there that are following the current news and all that, you hear a lot. You don't hear a lot, but you hear people mumbling, why doesn't Armenia allow the provinces outside of Artsakh to be taken back by the Azeris? And the Armenians in Artsakh say, you know what, that's not possible. Tell us a little bit why.
Can you ask me the question again? I'm sorry.
Well, the provinces outside of Artsakh that we have,
yeah,
went beyond Artsakh to just overlook our borders, basically, our protection.
Yeah.
There's Armenians out there that would say, why don't we just give back those territories? We don't have to give back Artsakh. How important is those lands to us, defense-wise, keeping them on our side?
Oh, Artsakh is like Garagin Nezhde said, you know, one of the greatest, you know, sons of Armenian nation. He said, you know, Syunik and Artsakh, those states are the backbone of Armenia. If we lose them, we'll lose the whole Armenia. Because the reason why the Azeris can't start a war is because, first of all, they know we're a lot stronger than them. Second, they know that the geographical location doesn't let them too easily fight us. That was the reason that Artsakh was invincible for thousands, God knows how many thousands of years. And all the mountains and stuff, they don't allow you to, like, come and easily fight us. They make barriers for aviation. They make barriers for the infantry, for, you know, all kinds of military units. So it's really, really hard to fight there. And if we lose it, the rest of the Armenia is pretty much, we don't have a lot of mountains there, except for Syunik and Artsakh. Those states are surrounded by mountains, and they create problems for those who want to invade us. So
right.
If we lose them, the rest are like kind of like just straight. It's a lot easier to fight there, and they might be able to, you know, reach some success if they get there.
No, okay. I wasn't referring to Artsakh itself. I was referring to the outside of Artsakh, that lands that we've captured outside the borders of Artsakh. Are those very crucial that we still hang on to those and not just give those back to the Azeris?
I don't think, to be honest, I don't think we captured anything. We just liberated those lands. We still have lands to to be freed. You know, Azeris now live like half of, you know, half of their country is pretty much ours. Nakhichevan is ours, and you know, they were just given to them by Soviet Union. And some states of Artsakh, like Getashen, Martunashen, and some parts that we didn't have time to liberate, like some parts of Martakert, some parts of Akhna, which they called Akhdam, and we have some land that are still there. So I don't think we captured anything. We still have some land to liberate, but we don't have anything that belongs to others. Not one bit.
Okay, so that was part of our origins as well, then.
Yes, and it was even much bigger. So, you know, it was just the Soviet Union that made Nagorno-Karabakh in sort of like an independent state and gave the rest to Azeris. But those lands that were given to Azeris, they still belong to us, and there are still lands in Azerbaijan that belong to us. So we don't owe them anything. They owe us.
Right, of course. Okay, now Tigran, how did this, let's back this up. Let's go in the time capsule here, and let's go in the early 1990s. When this all started, what was it that was the trigger? What was the mechanism that said, you know what, enough is enough. This is our country. We're liberating it.
Yeah, basically, during even Soviet Union, like Armenians and Azeris weren't getting along together, because what happened, the Soviet Union government was kind of spoiling the Azeris. So whenever something was happening, let's say if there was a crime and Azeri did that crime against an Armenian, like they would just let it go, you know.
A little slap would, you know, on the hand.
Yeah, that's right. And Armenians, they said, you know, what the heck? Like, you know, this can't keep going. So in 1988, when the Armenians knew that Soviet Union was going to collapse, and they said, you know what, like, we're not Azerbaijan, we've never been Azerbaijan, we were Armenia for God knows how many thousands of years, and we will be with Armenians. And in response, they did the Sumgayit, you know, they killed the Armenians in Sumgayit, and protests and all of those things. So, and it eventually became a war in 1990. But before that, there were some little fights and stuff, you know, some small fights, but nothing major. Like, pretty much the major war started in 1990.
That's interesting. So the Azerbaijan government, they did not want some sort of a peaceful negotiations with this little area that called Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh. They just reflected everything as, this is part of Azeri land, and we don't care what happens to the ethnic people known as the Armenians there.
Yeah, pretty much they don't care about, like, they think they owe the whole Armenia. Like, right now, Azerbaijan speaks about the four regions. They say, you know, give us the four regions, and we're not going to bug you anymore. But that's not true. We know them. You know, we know the Turks for thousands of years. You know, they're not going to, first of all, we have nothing to give them. But let's say if we even give them the four regions and say, don't bug us anymore, then what's going to happen? If they get the four regions, they pretty much have the advantage when the war starts. And when the war starts, we're going to lose the rest. And right now, even their president, Aliyev, he's claiming that Yerevan was an old Azerbaijani state. So, and when they get the four regions, they'll want the whole Artsakh. Once they get the whole Artsakh, they'll get the whole Armenia. Hmm. And when they get the Armenia, there will be no Armenians. So that's what they want to do.
Yeah, good luck to that, because I don't think we'll ever allow anything like this. How many would you say, Tigran, there were a lot of Armenians from Armenia that joined in on this, or was it mainly the Artsakh men and the old men together that formed together to fight against the Azeris, or were there a lot of Armenian troops that came across and said, you know what, we're going to help out our brothers over here in Artsakh.
Yeah, it was the whole Armenia, Armenia including Artsakh. When I say Armenia, I'm including Artsakh as a state of Armenia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just fought together. You know, there were a lot of people, especially from Artsakh, like every single family has lost someone, and in every single, pretty much all the families, all males in each family are veterans. So, but Artsakh is very small, and from Yerevan and other states of Armenia, a lot of people showed up, and a lot of people from diaspora showed up, and, you know, just united, you know, Armenians united, beat the hell out of them.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. Well, you know what? It's much more modernized now. We have an army. Before, you've seen like footages of basically just farmers that have picked up guns and
right.
That are going to the front line. And before then, they do a couple shots of vodka, Oli, and do a couple dances, and they were off to the front line. But now it seems like we have galvanized into a one strong army. And I think with the Azeris, it's not going to be as if they found it a task last time invading with Armenians that were farmers. Now we're talking about someone that is capable of a military position. That's a soldier fighting them as well.
Yeah. I mean, even being the farmers doesn't matter. There is an old Armenian saying that every single Armenian has their professional tool on the one hand, whether it might be a pen or a shovel, and on the other hand, it's a gun. So,
right,
you know, we always have that in us, and it doesn't matter what kind of military training, you know, we go through or whatever, you know, we're still are really good fighters. And currently, I mean, we have, I would say some people might not agree with me, but we have the best military when we're talking about the size, when we're talking about the financial aspect, you know, how financially limited our military is, but how effective and how strong that military is, we have the best, and we have the best soldiers. A lot of people think that when they're watching the movies or reading the books, they think that the best soldiers are the, you know, the steroid head guys, you know, the huge guys who can, like, you know, who are very well equipped and stuff, but that doesn't do anything. Azeris were very, very well trained in April of 2016. Very well trained. A lot of people are underestimating them, but they were very well trained, and they were very well armed and equipped. Very well. Like, but still, like, even being that equipped, it doesn't give you an advantage, because when you go to war, and it's not just in the war, it's in combat sports, and it's in many different fields. No matter how well you're trained, it plays no role if you're not ready psychologically. And our soldiers know the ideology they're fighting for. They know what's going to happen if they don't fight. They understand, and they're psychologically ready. But Azeris and Turks, they're psychologically not ready, but they're very well trained. But still, it doesn't give them any kind of advantage. So, you know, even being that well armed, you know, it's not going to give them like any big advantage.
Right. What did happen in April 2016? We know what transpired from a very vague understanding of they just broadsided us to where we weren't expecting it. One, number two, they outmanned us to where not maybe outmanned, but maybe outpowered us, and we still bent, but we didn't give. Tell me about that situation where it was called what, the 24-hour war?
The four-day war.
Four-day war. I'm sorry. Tell us a little bit about that.
So what basically happened in April, I guess they chose a day where a lot of people can't believe it. It was April Fool's, the April 1st. So basically, I don't know if that was a coincidence or whatever, but probably they were expecting others to like call each other, and be like, "Hey, you know, the war started," and they would be like, "Oh, are you kidding me?" You know, just it's just April Fool's.
Yeah.
But they just started that night. First, when what they did is, a lot of people are saying that was a situational thing. They tried something and they had some success and they wanted to continue. But I totally disagree with it. They were ready for it, you know, and they've been training for it for a while. And what happened on April 2nd, their special operation unit, they tried to attack and get like the highest battle posts, because if they get if they capture those posts, basically they have a lot of advantage. And what they tried to do, they tried to attack on those, and there were hundreds on each post. Like in each battle post, we have like a maximum of 9 people, including the officer. But there were 150, 200, and there were special operators, you know, that have been trained, that have fought in Syria and Pakistan. You know, they go fight there to get experience, and they come back. So basically, they started it at some places. They had some success, and pretty much what they wanted to do, they wanted to continue. And in one day, our military, they, you know, they weren't expecting it, and there were many, you know, many things that weren't right in the military. Now they're all fixed. A lot of people weren't taking the others seriously. They thought they're just joking and they're going to keep like shooting and, you know, do like have like little fights every now and then, and nothing major is going to happen. But now they're realizing everything is fixed. So a lot of people weren't expecting it. So in about 1 or 2 days, our military got themselves together and they just beat the hell out of others. Like currently they're saying they have, if I'm not mistaken, it's 31. To this day, they still claim that in April, they lost only 31 soldiers. And to be honest, like the videos and stuff I have seen, like only in one video, I saw over 31 special operators killed. They had at least 800 killed in 4 days. And, but you know, they're trying to hide it, but their opposition found, but their opposition already found over 200 dead, you know, dead soldiers, and right now they're prosecuting those, you know, those guys. They live in Germany and they're the opposition in Azerbaijan. So pretty much they're saying if you come back to Azerbaijan, you're going to go to prison.
Well, that's interesting too. That I want you to think about the Azeri side now. Don't the people in Baku that are sending their sons to Artsakh, to this Nagorno-Karabakh, where this boogeyman lives, to where it's not their world, it's not a safe zone. I mean, how do they convince these young men to go there and fight?
To be honest, they have no other, you know, I forgot the word.
Do they have a choice, or?
Yeah, they don't have a choice. Like, first of all, they're very strict, especially their police and their military and stuff. Recently, I think it was a couple months ago, they were killing. Like, they were saying that, you know, they committed crimes during April. They were like, you know, selling information and all of those things to Armenians, but that was just another BS. They never did anything. Pretty much whoever wants to talk the truth in Azerbaijan, they either go to prison or they die. You know, as unrealistic it might seem, but that's what happened. I think recently, it was about 2 months ago, I think they said that they committed crimes and stuff, and they killed about 11 or 12 officers, and that's what we know, like, right now. Probably there is more, but they're not letting anyone to talk the truth. So pretty much whoever says, oh, you know what, you know, my son is not going to go to this place and stuff, they'll have problems.
Wow.
And their media is very strict. Like, whoever talks about their casualties, like, they might they might go to prison or something. So it's very strict there.
It's state sponsored.
So, yeah, and it's state sponsored. Sometimes like there are families that, I mean, there was a situation in Talish, like in Talish and other like parts of Martaket where people saw how they're dumping their dead bodies in April and burning their bodies. Like, and I don't know if they were, you know, they were just guys, you know, from like, you know, Syria or whatever, but like mercenaries, but you know, they were, and I'm very serious, people, they were digging big holes, dumping their bodies there and burning those bodies. And I don't know, like, what they said to their families. I don't know if those people even have families, because a lot of people were in Azerbaijani when they were attacking the battle post.
Are there footages of this, Tigran?
There are footages, you know, but I don't think the military of defense, for some reason, they don't want to show those pictures, those footages. But you know, they had masks on. When they pulled the mask, you know, they're not Azerbaijani. There were a lot of people when they attacked the battle post, they weren't speaking even Azerbaijani. They were speaking Arabic.
Wow.
They were on drugs. I can send you a couple pictures showing like, you know, the stuff that they found in their pockets, like the marijuana and like heroin and all of those things. They were all on drugs and they were laughing when they were running on the battle post. So a lot of them didn't even speak Azerbaijani. It was like Arabic, Turkish. And right now they're trying to hide it, but two airplanes full of dead bodies flew to Turkey. And, you know, it's everybody knows about it. Probably what they wanted to do, that's my opinion. Probably they were like, oh, you can't fight those 18-year-old soldiers. Let me come and show how to fight them. And, you know, it didn't turn out very well for them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what? It's amazing that it seems like Azerbaijan's main weapon hasn't been the gun, but their media. And in the last month, we had that situation with they claimed we basically had open season on a old woman and a child, and they wanted to make this like a big forum for the whole world to see something, to kind of like create something like in Syria with the gas, with that gas attack and everything that was supposedly done by whoever, Assad and all that. But these folks, these Azeris, they wanted to make something much more of a European type of stand, to where they're showing us being ruthless Armenians, ruthless people, killing a woman and a child. And I don't think the world bought into it that much.
To be honest, I saw a couple big media channels like New York Times and BBC and stuff posting about it. But what happened, you know, we're lucky that right now we're very well equipped in terms of like army equipment, like, you know, like for observation and stuff. We have like advanced drones that can go and like, you know, record everything. And we have cameras that can record up to 15 kilometers. And we show them, I don't know if you saw the pictures, but they're putting their artillery units right next to their houses, knowing that, you know, we're not shooting from rockets that are going to like hit the, you know, bullseye. You know, no matter what you do, sometimes, you know, a couple missiles are going to be like, you know, 10 yards off or something. So what happens, you know, the missiles, you know, hit the houses, they have casualties, and then they blame us. To be honest, I even doubt that it was our fire. Sometimes they might do it too. Like, they're so, I have heard and seen so much horrible stuff from them that I don't even believe that, you know, we did it. So, but even if we did it, it's not our fault. You know, why would you put your artillery unit next to your house?
People at stake, yeah. Why would you put your people in the way of danger like that?
Yeah, why would you, like, use your villagers as a shield, then complain why, you know, the people are dying? Then they used the kid that died there. I don't know how old that kid was. They were using the kid's picture, like, all in blood and stuff, like, for their propaganda.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just all stupid nonsense.
Yeah, it goes to really show you what they think of human life, how they regard it. We, you know, God forbid, you know, if our 2-year-old kid dies, we have a happy view, a happy picture of the kid. They have a picture of a blood and everything. It's kind of like a whole two different type of ideologies of the world between the Armenians and the Azeris. So,
and they did it two days ago. Right now, they're claiming it's been 2 days. They're saying that Armenian snipers are shooting, and one of the 13-year-old kids that lives in a village, the kid got wounded. And pretty much what they want to do right now, and they said that yesterday they, you know, prevented our sabotage operation. So pretty much they said that, you know, our
I see that right in front of me. It says Azerbaijan prevents another Armenian sabotage, and they killed one of our people. I don't even know if this is true on the one kill.
They wish, and I can say it proudly. They were never able, it's been so many years, they've been never able to stop our sabotage operation. Whenever we wanted to attack their battle post, we did it. And they had massive casualties. So, you know, they wish. And I saw the video. It's just stupid. They just show like 20 seconds?
Yeah.
Like 20 seconds. And they're probably have their own people clowning in the middle of the field. So they don't even look like special operators. So that's just another BS. But this is the thing. Their public really believes it. And what they want to do is they want to convince their public that look, like Armenian snipers shot a 13-year-old kid and they wounded him. And then they wanted to do a sabotage operation. So now we need to, like, punish them. So if they shoot at our villages and civilians die, they'll be like, oh, you know what? Don't shoot at us and we won't shoot back. But, you know, that's what they do all the time.
No, you're right.
And our Armenian military warned them. They said, you know, we know what your next step is going to be. And, you know, if you're going to go to that next step, you know, you'll be punished.
No, you're so right. And, again, I brought up about 10 minutes ago, I brought up the word boogeyman, and I really think that they try to make the Armenians and the Azeris in Baku think that those are just the boogeyman, those are just monsters over there. They're trying to invade us. They're trying to invade our country. And it's so far from it because those Artsakh people just want to be left alone. I mean, we have no intention of taking any more of your so-called land. We're very happy. If you leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. So I don't understand that. And number two, I don't know how the world always sees if something happens, well, you two have got to stop. You two have got to relax. Why is it always you two have got to relax? Why can't they? They have all these satellites. They know who's starting what. I mean, one time, can't they point the finger on the side that always starts it and go, hey, you know what? We know it's you. We know it's you that started it. And stop. Yeah. We got to stop saying both sides have to sit down and talk. Both sides, one side is protecting itself and the other side is attacking. So what's the protecting side have to do? It has to protect itself and shoot back. So I don't know why they say both sides have to sit down.
Because they like black caviar a lot. That's why.
something to you, Ron.
Yeah, and what recently happened, I don't know. Do you remember? Well, I guess you do. When they were complaining that they were whining about us shooting at their villages. At that time, they shot at it's a air defense system. So they shot it, and they partially harmed it. And what they said after, they were bragging about it. They're like, oh, you know, we shot the Armenian, you know, air defense system and this and this and that. And they were bragging about it everywhere. That's where America, Russia, and France, that, you know, that union that takes care of the Karabakh conflict,
right.
they said, oh, you know what? You know, stop shooting. That's the only time. And the reason is because Azerbaijan was bragging about it. They're like, because, oh yeah, we did it. We shot it.
Yeah, I'm sure behind closed doors they said, you know what? Don't brag about it next time. When you do something, don't brag about it.
Yeah. Seriously.
Well, I tell you what, Tigran, this is a great segment to have on our show. What I'd like to do is have you on whenever something happens, whenever something news is out there. Please come on our show and fill us in on what's happening. And plus, maybe you can also give us a little history on some battles that were fought during the 1990s that I wish, when they had the microphone to these guys and they were talking the Armenian language and all that, and I did not understand a lot of what was being said. And maybe you could recap a little bit of that, too, whenever we go into something like that.
Absolutely, brother. My pleasure. I'll do it.
Thank you so much, Tigran. And, hey, folks, Tigran, he's another segment on our show that I think our listeners are going to love here. I think they're going to really appreciate a little bit of a modern type of politics and what's happening around the region there. Thank you so much, Tigran.
Thank you as well.
All right. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was Tigran Zakarian, and I'm so happy we got him part of this Armenia Proud, and it's going to be very interesting. Oh, by the way, Brian, over the weekend, I was at church, and I ran into Voice of America, and Voice of America is basically like Voice of Armenia, and they're here doing the chess tournament that this big-time chess tournament that's happening in St. Louis right now.
Yes.
And Kasparov's there participating, and there's a lot of Armenian influence in this chess tournament, and they're there, and you know what? They were so excited to hear about my show, our show here.
Well, that's good.
And I said, you know what? I love to interview you guys as well. Why don't you guys come to the studio? And they said yes, and well, sure enough, it happens to me, too, so I totally understand. They ran into a problem with someone that they asked for an interview, said, you know what, I can do it at this time, and unfortunately, that was our time. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and, well, that's not nice. That's
well, I mean,
kind of bad.
That's what I say. Yeah, you know, I say nice as in that's not nice.
Yeah,
so.
Well, don't use that. Any case, but we will have them on Skype next time, and Skype or phone call, and I'd love to interview them, see what they're all about. That's the first time I ever heard about them, and, you know, it sounds sounds great. It sounds like the Western, the diaspora getting involved, and that is so cool. So I can't wait to interview them. And what a great interview with Tigran Zakarian. And Tigran's going to be our guy that's going to give us, you know, I asked him, hey, you know, I'd like to have maybe like details of the past of our soldiers doing this or something that's happening now. And he said, you know what, John, I think that's a great idea. Let's roll with it. So we're definitely going to have him on as a segment as well. Unfortunately, my friends, that's all we have for this week. Anything going on, Brian, this week? Are we working on any guests?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've always got stuff that's coming up, but, you know, I'm not going to give anything away right now. We just got to wait till it's upon us, and then we're all excited.
Definitely. So thank you again, Tigran Zakarian, and we'll catch up with you guys on our next show. Take care. Genatsa Kisher Party, and we'll see you next week.
Tune in next week for another episode of A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. Find the show online at ArmeniaProud.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation at Facebook.com/ArmeniaProud or Twitter at ArmeniaProud. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. Thank you.
This podcast was a presentation of lightupmedia.fm.